Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, just a few announcements before we chat about this delightful episode, Guys Will Be Guys.
After next episode, season 2, episode 7, Darla, I wonder what that one will be about. We will be taking a short break for the holiday season, but do not fear, because our patrons will receive a bonus episode of Angel on Pot on New Year's Day to ring in 2020 with some delightful conversation brought to you by some legal California herb. We will be watching and discussing the Buffy episode, season 1, episode 7, Angel, which, as we remember, plays a huge role in the discussion of Angel and Darla's relationship to one another.
I cannot wait. Like, truly, what a way to Same. Ring in the new year.
Yeah.
And also, one lucky person who orders anything at any amount from the Angel on Top merch store before December 6th, which is this Friday, will win a bonus prize, a Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy mug. You can find our 3 original t-shirts, the Rogue Demon Hunter tee, the Cordelia tee, and our logo tee, as well as our big demon energy pin at angelontop.merchnow.com. And get excited, because behind the scenes, we've been working on a brand new item that's been oft requested on the old messaging boards and you will hopefully love. Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And this week we're watching Guys Will Be Guys. Stick around until the end for an original poem written by us through the perspective of Wesley as Angel?
Guys Will Be Guys was written by Jane Espenson and directed by Krishna Rao. It aired on November 7th, 2000.
This is the one where Angel meets with a swami to end his obsession with Darla. Meanwhile, Wesley assumes Angel's identity and plays bodyguard to a businessman's daughter.
It's also the one where Wesley gets his groove back. So excited to talk about this episode. 2 in a row. We're 2 for 2 of really excellent episodes in very different ways.
Yeah, this is the only plot that could get me to not be angry about the fact that we dropped the Darla storyline for an episode.
Truly, I went into the first act of this episode being like, surely we need to keep the momentum of like, show me Julie Benz. What is she doing? How is she feeling? Is she with Lindsay? Is she with Lila? What is the follow-up? I wanted to know her emotional impact from that meeting at the convent with Angel. But instead, we are taken on this journey of mistaken identity, of self-help, that I did not see coming, and I was delighted by.
It's an excellent episode, and obviously it was written by none other than Jane Espenson. Because she also wrote Room with a View. And this is actually, spoiler, this is the last episode that she will write for Angel. And so it kind
Bummer.
Of, I know. So like the interesting thing about the Angel and Buffy writers' rooms is that Buffy season 5 was obviously going on the same time as Angel season 2. And so the building that they were in, they were basically like one floor up. So even though they had their own separate writers' rooms, obviously since Joss has worked so frequently with people like Marty Noxon and Jane, he would bring them in to like do a freelance script basically. Like I don't think that they were part of the staff writing team, but they were someone that he could reach out to either consult with or to, again, just write like a freelance episode. And so there were a lot of moments in this episode where I feel like, you know, Jane like came downstairs to the Angel's writer's room. She was like, okay, so what's been going on this season? And she's catching up with the new plots that they've set up. And she's like, hang on,
Namely
wait.
Lauren.
Yeah, she's like, wait a minute. So there is a karaoke bar of demons where everyone is civil, and there's this guy who reads demon souls, but you have to sing first, and you can tell.
And he's definitely canon homosexual.
Yes. And I feel like her reaction to learning this, like, new batshit storyline that the Angel writers had put together was very much put into Gunn's reaction, where he's like, wait, what?
Yeah, that really explains how expositional that scene was.
Totally.
It's like, just in case you're just tuning in for the first time this season.
Yeah. And then I feel like it also came out, too, in, you know, the guy who was posing as Tish, him basically explaining Angel to himself. So he's like, okay, so wait a minute. So you live in Los Angeles, the super sunny capital of the world, and you drive a convertible, and you dress like this.
I loved how much he was just dragging him.
Yeah.
Like, he hit the convertible. He hit the hair gel. He hit the all black. You're right. It does feel like a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Like an outsider. Yeah, and like an outsider looking in and being able to comment on the world that they've built, and also kind of do it from like a higher perspective of like, you guys realize this is kooky, right? Like, yeah, this is a little crazy. And like a vampire having like wanting to sleep all the time, like that is completely out of character for everything we know of vampires. It was a fun episode, I think, because of the fact that she had written it.
And honestly, the comedic sensibilities in this episode, if only women were funny, you know? All right, should we get into it?
Yes.
So we start with Wesley being an itchy, bumbly boy. And I will say, I feel like this show is selective about when they want to lean into this character trait of Wesley being kind of awkward and
like a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, like, because we've definitely seen moments of brilliance where he more clicks into his rogue demon hunter self. But at the top of this episode, he's definitely in like his most insecure, most awkward. And this rather handsome man comes in.
Oh, you thought so?
I mean, I guess I'm just surprising myself with this knowledge right now. I guess I guess I did find him.
I did not find him handsome.
I guess he's what some heterosexual women might describe as rugged.
What?
That's what y'all say, right? Oh, this strapping, rugged.
He was
tall, glass
old.
Of water. Brittany, we all know my track record.
You
I do
like
not see
old.
Age. Anyway, he comes in and he wants to talk to the boss.
No, we're not passing over this.
We
so
absolutely
quickly.
Are. We all have our things. It's fine. I'm not hung up on him. I was just saying he was ruggedly good looking. Now let's move on. And he's not my fuckwatch pick, so
all
don't
right,
worry.
Whatever. So we already saw his insecurity last episode with like where he stands, his role in the agency. And now he is even more insecure about the fact that he's being compared to Angel in such a way that makes him feel like a little baby. He gets referred to as the secretary, which also isn't a degrading term, but this your rugged, handsome boyfriend is clearly doing that on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just sort of like, this is bad business, and pieces out. And then Cordelia comes down in like a purple silk number. Is clearly, she's the only one who shares our perspective that we should all still be freaking out about Darla.
Yeah.
she like comes in with that voice of like, hey, anyone remember what just happened? And also, Angel's not here right now, so why are we even bothering, like, taking walk-ins right now when, like, literally Angel is disappeared and we know that, like, his greatest love, ?
Second greatest.
Longest love.
Okay.
Is here and a human and trying to destroy him and make him evil again. Like, maybe let's go check into that. Also, Wesley, do you have anything that makes you look like a man? Which, wow, uncalled for, that insult. But then we cut to where they are tracking Angel down, which is he's with Gunn at Wolferman Heart. He clearly slept on whatever Darla said to him, and now he really needs to talk to her again. Granted, he let her slowly walk away up a staircase into the sunlight and seemed a little bit too stunned to do anything at the moment at the end of Dear Boy.
You're doing it again.
Which I think is, you know, at first it kind of, I balked at it a little bit, but I think that actually is realistic, where you have this intense emotional conversation with someone and then you walk away, and especially when they hit at some really deep truth about you that you do not want other people to see, you can be kind of shocked in the moment, and then when you sort of reflect later with distance on what just happened, you can have like a new wave of anger about it. Mm-hmm. So he's basically showing up to Wolfram and Hart with no plan, wanting to track Darla down.
Yeah, and Gunn is along for the ride, as he states, which is kind of enabling Angel in its own way. It's kind of like when your friend is into someone who sucks and they're like, hey, come to, will you come to like her show with me? And you're like, ugh. All right, fine, I'll go, but mainly because I have nothing else to do. So that's like not necessarily holding your friend accountable for making this really bad choice with this garbage person. Whereas Cordelia is the friend who actually holds them accountable and is like, no, this is a horrible idea. What are you doing? And in a way, it's like partly because she is a real friend and she cares about Angel. But I also think
Gunn's a real friend, too. That's another way of showing up for someone, to be like, you're in it and I'm just gonna like be by your side even if you're making really bad choices right now.
But I also think Cordelia, the other half to what I was saying, is that I think she also is probably concerned for her safety and for her money. If Angel goes bad again, then there goes her livelihood.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell where the intention's coming from.
She's a leading woman in business.
She really is.
I think we're meant to believe that they ultimately convinced him to abort the mission because the elevator door opens and he stakes a guard in the foot. But then they must have convinced him to leave and to not actually try to find Lindsay or Darla.
And they're like, let's go see your therapist.
Yeah, instead, we're going to go to the karaoke bar. And Gunn is going to be very confused.
It kind of read to me like a straight guy's first time at a gay bar.
So what you're saying is all of these dudes like dudes, even that dude who's objectively pretty ruggedly handsome, he too would be into someone, I don't know, hypothetically like me, no homo. And they're like, yes, you know, all stripes. And meanwhile, Angel is talking to Lauren. And I don't know if it's just that at this point, Angel has come back and sung so many songs for Lauren that Lauren's like, you don't even need to sing tonight, honey.
Please don't.
I got you. I got your number. I know what's up. Actually, I'd prefer if you don't sing. It's hurting my business. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go look up what is obviously my ex-boyfriend that I'm not saying explicitly. My friend out in Ojai. Beautiful out there.
Beautiful space.
Yeah. Very healing, surrounded by nature, woods. You're going to go to a cabin. You're going to find someone named
Tishmagev.
I love that name, by the way. Tishmagev. And he's going to fix you right up. Like, you are in a rocky road right now, and he's going to have the answers you seek.
But it also seems like, at this point, Lauren is the only person that Angel can really talk to about the level of darkness to which he feels. Because I think that...
Well, because he doesn't have to talk to him about it.
Right.
He knows that Lauren will just know. I don't know if you've noticed, but Angel's not the best communicator. So the fact that there's this person now who he can just look at him and be like, you know what I mean? And Lauren's like, yeah, buddy, I do. Here's the answer. Like, isn't that... We all want a Lauren.
Maybe. I think so. If we want to be held accountable, we do.
Well, right. I mean, you would seek Lauren out. Lauren doesn't come seeking you. Like, when you really need someone to tell you what's up, you go to a Lauren. He's like the best type of therapist.
So now Cordelia and Wesley get to play in the office because Dad is gone. And Cordelia, I really enjoyed her Angel impressions, which is like, I'm mad. I'm going to read a leather-bound book.
I'm going to alphabetize my past sins.
Yeah, and it's clear that at this point, obviously before any conflict arises, Cordelia is actually pretty relieved that Angel is gone because he's been so erratic and angry lately.
Yeah, I think we get to see just how much it's been chipping away at her. Like, basically the arc of this whole season of how unavailable he's been, how because of how much he's sleeping, and now them knowing the reason why and fearing that he's going to turn to Angelus. Like, I think she's been bearing the weight of the world.
Yeah.
And we check into Angel arriving at this cabin, and the man who answers the door is like an actor was given the direction, play like camp daddy.
Or like Midwestern daddy.
Dad. Yeah. There's just like throw on a plaid shirt, dispense wisdom as you're stringing your fishing pole together.
Yeah. And have like a towel casually on your shoulder and be like, hey, you want to come in? You want a brewski?
Did I use this towel to wipe off dish soap or grease? You'll never know.
But this is Art LaFleur, the actor. He is a character actor that you may remember from The Sandlot. He's the babe.
Okay.
He also was in Field of Dreams, where he also played a baseball player, Chick, the first baseman. He also was in this movie that I used to rent when I was a kid called Man of the House, which had Chevy Chase and Jonathan Taylor Thomas, where Chevy Chase is like his new stepdad and he's trying to win over JTT, and JTT's like, I don't think so. But then they join this Boy Scout troop together, like father-son Boy Scout troop, and Art LaFleur plays the lead of the Boy Scout troop. Like, he's the leader.
Wait, they made Troop Beverly Hills for boys?
Kind of. So Art LaFleur plays this character named Red, who's really obsessed with Native American culture, which, as I say it all out loud, it sounds very problematic.
It likely does not hold up.
Yes. But it was a good movie.
Also, now I really want to watch Troop Beverly Hills. Let me know if you ever want to throw on a rewatch of that.
Hell yeah. And he was also in Disney's First Kid, if you remember First Kid, about
President, something about the president.
Yeah.
Vaguely.
Yeah.
Probably could find it on Disney Plus.
He also played Mayor Daley, which Mayor Richard Daley was the mayor of Chicago, in a short-lived TV show filmed in Chicago called The Playboy Club, where it was all about like the underground Playboy Club starring Amber Heard.
Real quick, are you obsessed with him? This is a lot of information about what this one actor has done.
Are you okay? Respect
his craft.
I respect art, and I respect Art LaFleur.
And I love Art's art. And I really love Art's art in this scene because, like we said before, this is when Art is saying what we all have been thinking about Angel to Angel. Like, why do you hate yourself, Angel? You choose the city that is known for the highest number of sunny days per year, and you choose to put your life in your hands every time you're driving around in your convertible. You must really care about appearances. And I will say, he was really incisively hitting at some truths, which made the reveal later somewhat disappointing because I was really into his approach.
Well, I think he found his calling.
Yeah.
Okay, I just figured out why I really like Art LaFleur. He reminds me of both of my grandfathers.
Mm.
Both of my grandpa's names were Gordon. He reminds me of Gordon.
Pouring one out for Gordons.
One had a drinking problem.
He really embodies that archetype.
Completely.
The patriarchal, but like the kind of pleasant side of the patriarchy, mm-hmm, in some ways. Like, this is the man who's going to dispel wisdom and let me know how to live my life and do it with a gentle but firm touch.
And it's not who you're expecting at all.
No.
Especially someone that is connected to Lorne. Like, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been a bear, though. You know.
True.
To Lorne's bottom.
Yeah. Back at Angel Investigations, a man holds Cordelia at gunpoint and is like, all right, one more time. Where is your boss? I need him. And Wesley, now having gone through this journey of being really emasculated, I suppose, he's like, all right, this is my fucking chance for me to save my friend, to prove that I'm a man. And so I'm going to put on this black trench coat and pretend to be Angel. And it works.
Yeah, he strides right in and was like, I'm the man you're looking for, essentially. He's just, I think, hoping that he can deflate the situation in the moment.
Yes.
But instead, now he's being kidnapped at gunpoint.
And one of my favorite parts was where the guy's like, you're coming with me. And Wesley's like, well, I shan't be cooperative. But then he, like, cooperates fully.
And they take him to this Richie Rich house. And two big and talls are like, talking about business as they walk in and turn their attention to Wesley. And he quickly finds out that the goon that took him at gunpoint was hired by who I think is meant to be like some sort of famous CEO. His name is Magnus Bryce. We learn that Magnus is like, surprise, I don't have my money from whatever business that you thought I did. I have it from wizardry, boo. And also, I'd like to point out that in 2000, the fourth Harry Potter book had just come out. So we were in the throes of Harry Potter fever. I don't think that's a coincidence that Angel was suddenly like, how about some wizards? They're in the zeitgeist right now.
But Mr. Bryce wants Angel because he wants to protect someone very close to him.
Guess who it is?
It's his daughter.
Dad's in this show.
What?
Dad's in this show.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my daughter. Yeah, I need to protect my daughter.
Especially this season. There's just been a lot of dad stuff.
Angel Investigations' new slogan should be Angel Investigations, protector of daughters for dads. The scene where Bryce offers Wesley blood was delightful. And I've got two little fun facts about that. So Alexis Denisoff said he really enjoyed playing Angel in this episode. However, in an article that the BBC wrote asking him about that fake blood that he had to drink and what it was made of, he responded with, I'm not sure. I should find out because I have not been feeling well ever since.
How long after was that interview?
I don't know. But the internet said, this is just more like science fact. The internet has told me that if this was in the real world, if Wesley had drank that much human blood, he could have been poisoned or killed, because drinking that much blood is just on its own extremely dangerous, especially if the blood type is not that of the drinker, which I found incredibly interesting.
So it was basically like a Russian roulette move that he even tried it without asking what blood type it was.
Yeah, entirely. But yeah, I mean, it could have been a fun, like in True Blood, there's obviously like that the way that they've set up how vampires enjoy blood is like each blood type is kind of like its own flavor profile. So like there is a preference. But in this show, they don't really set up like a preference for blood types. It's just like blood. Like it's like one.
It can be human. It can be pig. Doesn't matter. And I also definitely recognize the actor who plays Magnus and his name. I also know a little bit about the body of work of a older white male actor. Todd Sussman, who plays Magnus. I definitely recognized him. A little IMDb search revealed that he was a series regular on Orange is the New Black.
Wait, who was he?
One of the characters. He's also just got one of those faces, you know? He had a ton of credits, but it was mostly like a one-off here, a one-off there, but then reoccurring in Orange.
Oh, he's the father of... He's Jason Biggs's father in the series.
Oh, yeah, cool. I knew that. I'm a pretty big fan of Todd and his work. But we cut back to Angel getting some more life advice from the phony Tish. And now he's, like, giving him shit about his hair gel and, like, how do you expect to fight the coming apocalypse if you're still fighting yourself? Granted, they sound kind of like throwaway, like he could have Googled this advice if Google existed at this point. But... Did Google exist at this point? Doesn't matter.
When did Google come out? 98.
Okay, so early days of Google, he may have done a little quick search because he also was clearly tipped
Maybe
off
he
that Angel
asked
was...
Jeeves.
He could have asked Jeeves. Many of you may not remember Jeeves. And meanwhile, Wes is an interesting choice, brought into the daughter he's meant to protect's bedroom to meet her for the first time. And we meet Virginia.
She is your type. She is Aunt Amy all over
again. She is a type that I, yeah. Does she resemble very closely a couple of my exes? Yes.
Did it turn you off when she repeatedly called her dad daddy?
Absolutely.
Was she written as if she was 17 years old, but she's actually like 35?
Yes. Well, the character's supposed to be 24. The actress is probably 35. But I will say, I think that may have been intentional on Jane's part, because they really hit on the head that she had this sort of stunted upbringing.
Purposefully,
she wasn't, she was so sheltered. She's not been allowed to ever like leave. She constantly has guards with her.
She's being treated like the president's daughter or something. Not to bring it back to first kid.
But not to bring it back to art.
But it's all like in service of Bryce not wanting his daughter to have sex. He wants her to be pure. Ugh. Which is fucking crazy. Because I also love, I'm obviously jumping the gun here.
Way jumping.
But her being like, you think that you could stop me from fucking? That's hilarious, daddy.
Yeah, you are just rocketing way ahead. But this is an episode of many reveals. It's an episode of no one actually being what they seem to be, except for basically Virginia.
Well, the beauty of that is that one thing that art says is that there's two yous, the image you create and the real you, which is a theme that I think flows really nicely through this episode.
And I guess for Virginia as well, because of her perceived virginity, which really that's just on her dad.
Virgin.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Virgin.
Wow.
Yeah.
A little on the nose.
Well, like she's her two selves, her perceived purity and her actual having sex with her dad's friends.
But yeah, it turned into a really creepy purity ball reveal.
The Patriot.
So fun thing about this actress, Bridget Brenna, she is in Hulu's The Runaways.
Yeah. I also looked her up.
Excuse me.
No reason.
But she plays the mother of my favorite character, Gert. But also in The Runaways is James Marsters.
Wait, does she play the woman who's like the head of the super church?
No, she plays like the like bioengineering nerdy mom.
Oh, that's her?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Love that for her.
Totally. It was, I love her. Like the.
She's great.
Yeah, that couple is really great.
I love that because it's such a different character than
very
this.
Off type. Totally. She's also been on like every single procedural an hour long that you could possibly think of since the 90s.
She's
been
made
on
a career.
Every single one.
She's made a career for herself.
And I really just have to hand it to Alexis Denisoff this episode, because he is the king of physical comedy in this episode. Mm-hmm. He is having to play his character of Wesley, also playing Angel and recognizing when there's inconsistencies in the character of Angel, which he's playing, like with the cross and with the mirror and with being invited into the house.
And then trying to cover for it and
it
come up with
so
an excuse on the spot.
Funny.
And I know that we've talked about something like this before, but it also gave me echoes of that Orphan Black thing, because they do that a lot with characters playing other characters. But also, I don't know if you noticed this, but there was something about the way that Wesley would talk when he was pretending to be Angel in one of those moments where he had to cover for himself that reminded me of Daria, the way Daria would talk.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like, yes, I am Angel, the vampire with a soul. I am here to protect you. Like, he definitely took on a more like robotic, like I'm slowing down my speech so I can think of what I'm going to say next thing.
And Virginia is not pleased that Wesley is her bodyguard, or that she has a bodyguard at all. she wants to be rid of this situation. And so she's like, all right, fuck it. Let's go shopping. Let's go to the wizard store. Because I got to get Daddy a 50th birthday present for his party later.
Meanwhile, Cordelia is with Gunn and freaking out to him and telling him what happened with Wesley. And they make a plan. Gunn's going to go track down Angel at his spiritual retreat in Ojai. And Cordelia is going to go try to figure out the identity of the person who stole Wesley at gunpoint.
Yeah, and she's like going through the mugshot database on her Carrie Bradshaw laptop. And actually, by her reading a gossip magazine, which is something that's more natural to her, she's able to find the information she was looking for way more quickly than using like the Wesley Giles Willow method.
Yeah, just be yourself, girl.
Yeah.
It'll work out. We see at the wizarding store, Wesley gets his first opportunity to really try protecting Virginia. And he really experiences the power of how much Angel's reputation precedes him. Because when these two big blokes try to take Virginia, he just basically has to be like, I'm Angel.
And they're
the
like,
vampire.
Oh, no. But also, this is like the most like casual kidnapping effort ever, which is also like later exactly what they do, where they just like grab her wrist and they're like, you're coming with us, I think. But they also say something along the lines of, all right, say goodbye to the pretty guy. We're leaving. So even though Cordelia had made a remark about Wesley earlier, it's like now since he's taken on this new role, people are seeing him as like this like hot guy.
And when you say people, that includes Laura Zach.
Oh.
There was something about him throwing on that coat and, you know, just it was really just about his confidence. He just became more attractive when he was more confident about his abilities.
Right. It's like, is this something that has always existed in Wesley and can he only tap into it through impersonation? It seems like it.
And you want to know who else seems to suddenly take a shine to Wesley as Angel? Virginia.
Well, that's the thing. So it's like, is she into Wesley because she thought he was Angel? And there's like this, you know, there's obviously like this whole image around who Angel is and the lore of him. And because he's also, if she know, I mean, obviously her dad and like that whole world knows about Angel's curse, and it's something that Wesley brings up. But like, is this something that she knew about? Like, is he just kind of like forbidden fruit? And so that's why she's into it. Or is she actually sleeping with him because she likes Wesley? And so obviously later when she finds out that he is not Angel, she's upset, which also I understand. Like,
she feels betrayed by him lying to her.
So it's like, do you feel like she was only upset because he lied to her about who she is, even though he was like, I got to tell you something. And she's like, tell me later. Let's just fuck. Or
yeah, but he very easily could have pulled away and said, no, first.
Sure. Yeah. Do you believe that she was only upset because she was lied to? Or do you think she was also kind of upset because she thought she was sleeping with this cool dude and she ended up just sleeping with some random British guy?
I mean, we find out later that she's slept with multiple chauffeurs, so I don't think that like
that allure really was what she was attracted to. It was more like she's sexual, and so she wanted to have sex with someone that she connected with.
Yeah, I think it was complicated. I think it was all the things, and I think that it wasn't until the end when Wesley then saves her as himself that she gets to experience like the holistic version of who Wesley is, which
right.
is the person she fell for.
Yeah.
Who is still very brave and capable and also very smart. And I think that's why they had one of the things they were first bonding over at the wizardry store be like derived from Wesley's intelligence and mm-hmm. his knowledge of these items and like symbols that she was shopping for her dad for. Like, and she even said one part, remind me of your dad, which yeah. wasn't great. The arena that they more connect with first is actually Wesley. And then what further solidifies it is him protecting her, which is also Wesley, but she ascribes to someone else. So I think I think it's beautifully complex. The one moment where I did feel echo tremors of that was when they're about to sleep together.
Yeah.
It did feel a little bit like, I know this is bad to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that. And again, I wonder if there's like a similarity to what Darla just went through the previous episode of the ego around believing that you're the one who can be capable of giving this man that you're attracted to a pure moment of happiness.
Well, yeah, I think like a lot of eroticism is derived from like the narrative that that is in your head of like, that's why sex is usually really good with like people that you know are horrible for you, because it's not necessarily about just like the physical, you know, activity that's happening, but it's like the narrative that you've placed in your head creates like an erotic response.
Right, totally. And I also think connected to that, there's such an eroticism about feeling special,
mm-hmm.
and feeling like the one who can do something for this person that no one else can, or that they are so attracted to you that they are willing to risk
their humanity.
Yeah. And, you know, there's something, it's just kind of like an extreme example of like why some people are drawn to taboo situations or things that are like not allowed or dangerous, and how that can like amp up the eroticism when you're not necessarily in like the healthiest of places.
Right. Well, it's also like a whole like genre of stories like Twilight or like 50 Shades of Grey, or even like obviously Buffy and Angel's love story is like way better than these things, but like something about the forbidden is what makes it more sexual and more almost like romanticized in that way.
One thing I will say to Virginia's credit and to Jane's credit, I suppose, she didn't come across the way the character in Untouched did when she was throwing herself at Angel. Like, I really believed that Virginia and Wesley had a genuine connection, and
totally.
It wasn't just about like sticking it to her dad and like sleeping with his associate that he hired to protect her or whatever. Like,
yeah, maybe I think it was only that way with Rick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think maybe that had happened before, but she didn't know that he was counting her on her being a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she didn't know that until the end, and it was laughable to her. So I don't think she was aware that her chastity was being like vigilantly protected in this
mm-hmm.
way. We so rarely see it wasn't a sex scene, but it was all leading into sex scenes that are genuinely about connection. Like, I can't remember the last time. Like, maybe Angel and Buffy? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the cool part of that conversation was she was able to communicate to Wesley, like, even though this world that I live in, I'm sure a bunch of other people would want, I want to like experience something more simple. Like, I would love to just be like a perfume sprayer, but I can't do that. And so he's able to empathize with her in a way that I don't think these other people in her circle can. And so she does feel connected to him. And that, again, that it, like you said, that is actually Wesley.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
So this episode basically has two A stories. I couldn't really decide which was the A and B because they both felt of equal importance. And then conveniently, they all end up tying together when we find out that Tish McGev is also not who he says he is. He's actually in cahoots with one of the big dudes who's working for Bryce.
Which also is kind of clear, because when Angel is talking about Darla, he's like, you're obsessed, buddy. Like, at first he is insightful and he's like,
this is where it turns. This is when he goes from like, all right, he's doing a pretty solid job with Angel, you know, shifting his perspective. And then it was like, record scratch.
Totally.
Oh, just some misogyny creeping in here.
Because he's, you know, he is, again, he's giving somewhat insightful or just asking questions that I think that someone needs to ask Angel, where he's like, do you blame her? Do you want to punish her? Do you want to thank her? And you're like, wow, this is like, he does seem genuinely interested. But then it becomes very clear that he is not a higher being, because he's like, all right, so what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to fuck someone who kind of looks like Darla. Now, they have to have the same hair color. That is very important. And then after you fuck her, you're going to treat her like shit. Trust me, man, it's going to work out. And Angel's like, what?
I feel like this is where he started to figure out, something was awry, or at least I hope that that's when he started to figure it out. But yeah, there was something very, what are they called? Not the incels, but the pickup artist type things, it's like men just trying to teach other men to make women feel like shit so that women will become like really needy of
validation.
Of validation from that person.
Right. It's like some tactic to believe that there's like some cheat code to getting a woman to sleep with you. And it's like, leave, like, you go to a different place every 20 minutes so that she's actually more connected to you, because it'll seem like she's been to more places with you. And this all is disappointing because they had a really good stick fighting session. Like, I wish my therapy was like that, or you and
it was a little bit karate kid.
Yeah, or like me and Amy would just be like being there with sticks. But either way, like you said, it is interesting that some of Tish's advice, or fake Tish, some of his advice is kind of like spot on with Angel. Is it a way to show that most people's problems are somewhat universal, and so you can kind of throw a blanket on whatever it is and the specifics don't quite matter? Or did he do his research?
Did you watch Parasite yet?
No, I'm wanting to.
Oh, please do. There is no spoilers, but there is a like small storyline that plays out that is similar, doing very minimal research and then really pulling it off. Like, when Wesley and Virginia are about to sleep together, there's sort of like this funny moment of Wesley being like, well, actually, you know, this whole curse thing.
Because, like, he is realizing, well, it's like, it's hard to tell, like, is he doing this because he wants to be consistent with the character of Angel, or is he doing it because, like,
it's I think kind of we like, know why he's doing it.
Yeah. And then she's like, are you being honest with me? And he's like, well, actually. And she's like, never mind. Kiss me, you fool. Tell me the important thing after you penetrate me.
Oh, Brittany.
What?
So unromantic. It's fine.
That's what I say to my girlfriend all the time.
All right. Well, everyone has their own things.
And then Gunn shows up in Ojai, which I hope he was compensated for gas. But he shows up and is like, yo, I'm here for Angel. And fake Tish is like, of course, follow me. He's inside. And then elbow to the head. And then this is obviously where Angel confirms that Tish, that this Tish is not real. And then this fucking nightmare fuel of a scene.
So badass, though.
No, I hated it.
Where Tish is like, well, I guess you can't get me out here in the sunshine. It feels great out here. And then Angel takes the fishing pole, which ugh. Tish has been playing with all episode, and just fucking like whips it out there and gets him in the cheek.
Fish
hooks him. And then reels him in.
Yeah, I did not
like
that.
And he said, I'm getting in touch with my inner demon. It was awesome.
Ugh. So obviously Virginia and Wesley have slept together, which also was surprising that like nobody came and checked on Virginia before she went to bed.
Because it's also at this point we are led to believe that the dad knows.
Mm-hmm.
Like the dad seemingly, the way the time frame is, knew before they slept together that this wasn't really Angel.
The fun thing that we learn is that these people don't know the details of Angel's curse and that they keep getting it wrong. Like when Bryce is like, yeah, we hired him because he's a eunuch. And it's like, wait, no, I think you're getting, and even Angel is like, I think you're getting these details wrong. But if they got these other details, which was like when Angel has sex, he turns into this evil demon. It's like, would they willingly put Virginia in the situation where once she has sex with him, he turns into a fucking villain?
Well, that's what the dad says at the end. That's why I chose you, because he expected Angel to have the restraint.
Right.
Like, he didn't think it would be an issue because Angel would never do that because he would turn.
Yeah, it's like weird that he's relying on this stranger as opposed to like his daughter. I don't know. It was weird. It's all weird, Laura.
Yeah, none of it was like, oh, yeah, Magnus' POV is definitely something that resonates. This, like, fucking sexist wizard dude.
The worst kind.
Yeah.
But then Cordelia is here to save Wesley. She's like, yeah, the security was not good here because they just let me right in. When she sees Wesley finally, she's like, wow, it's crazy. They don't even know you're a shemp. And at first, I thought that she was referencing The Three Stooges, which is the show that I love so much. But little did I know that the word shemp actually means someone who appears in a film as a replacement for another actor or person.
Oh, she's bringing her theatrical knowledge forward.
Or it was supposed to lend itself as a double entendre.
Also, did you notice the detail of how when Wesley and Virginia wake up the morning after, they're cozy in bed together, and then you cut to Wesley sneaking out, and it lets it linger a beat until you see Virginia's with him as they're leaving the room. Like, there was a moment of, like, is this going to be a Buffy situation?
Oh, where he just, like, leaves and doesn't tell her?
Yeah. And then, again, it's like, oh, this is not Angel.
Aww.
In the good ways, too.
Yeah, like the differences that are actually positive things.
Yeah, and they share, like, a really tender kiss in the morning after, and, like, she's very sweet and flirty and like, I'll get your coat.
Yeah, he didn't turn into a demon after he had sex with her.
Wow. I mean, that's a low bar, but still one to strive for. Speaking of morning after.
Book watch?
Yeah.
Book watch. I know.
What do you know?
I know that your cup of tea is this curly-haired redhead.
Okay. But I'm not going to choose her.
Oh. She doesn't know you're playing hard to get. You do know that, right?
Oh my gosh, Brittany, this isn't a game. This is life. I am more drawn to newly confident
Wesley
as Angel.
Yeah.
He is my pick today. I love that he stepped back into this confident, but also vulnerable part of himself that we only like rarely get to see. Like once he distances himself from his own insecurity, he becomes much more attractive. And it's not just him as Angel that I like. It's him in the final scene where he's taken off the coat, but he's still like leading the group in and being like, I'm going to save this person.
You know how like every time they like bust in somewhere, it's always Angel at like the tip of the triangle of that formation. And this time it was Wesley because it was like him. He was the hero
all along. When really like it's kind of true of the whole season because Angel has been so passive, so out of it because of his Darla obsession and sleeping issues that Cordelia and Wesley and also Gunn have had to really step up.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was beautiful to watch. And I, like Virginia, appreciated it.
Yeah. So my pick is not a person.
You and your sneaky little like cheats. Okay, go on.
But I will describe what it embodied or the thing that I was attracted to, which
is it that witch at the end?
No. It was not Yeska. These caught me by surprise because they showed up out of nowhere. They were inconsistent, and I just wanted to fix them.
Oh, no.
They were Cordelia's hair extensions that were inconsistent this entire episode. One scene, she'd have her hair like this. Like, she'd have it layered in the front, and then there'd just be, like, a giant hair extension and a ponytail.
How is this your fuckwatch pick, though? It bugging you that her hair was messed up is your fuckwatch pick?
Because I want to fix them. I want to know where they go when they're not there. Like I'm truly just so compelled by the mystery of why and how and where and what these things have to do. And it's honestly the one, you know, sentient being, one object.
It's not sentient. It's hair.
That really caught my attention.
This is one of your reachier reaches. It's a stretch.
So is this weirder than the 2x4 or weirder than the few centimeters of space between Lila and Faith?
No, it's way weirder. 2x4 at least was like a phallic instrument. Like at least that's something that's like, okay, that could be something that I can see an eroticism attached to. And then the centimeters of space.
I think hair has a lot of eroticism to it.
Sure, but this isn't really the way
that you would do it. Okay, Laura, I'm judged right now. I feel judged.
I just feel like you're pushing the boundaries a little bit too far.
What an artist does, Laura?
Okay. I'm going to have to keep you in check this season. I think I'll let you get away with this one when really I know that you actually want to pick Virginia. And you can.
No.
You clearly want to.
No, I actually don't. She says daddy way too much. It makes me really uncomfortable.
I call BS on your answer.
Okay.
But we'll let it stand for now. But no more of these like hair extensions and animate like pieces of wardrobe. Inanimate objects moving forward.
I didn't see that I couldn't do that.
So you're just going to like take those hair extensions and like slap yourself?
That's a great idea. So this is obviously the scene where Cordelia realizes that A, Wesley is pretending to be Angel. B.
Well, she already knew that.
He's not in trouble. But C, that Wesley fucked.
Well, she doesn't find that out until the very end.
Oh, I feel like she kind of starts to grasp that.
Yeah, but there was that really funny scene at the very end where everyone's like, you slept with her? Oh my gosh, like where it kind of took this like pivot from intense drama into like awkward comedy. And she was very like miffed.
But Cordelia is not the only one who figured out that Wesley has been pretending to be Angel all along. Bryce figured it out as well, and so did Virginia.
Well, the way that Virginia figures it out is because Bryce has figured it out and like exposes Wesley in front of Virginia by pushing him out of the window into the sunlight. And Wesley like tries to put it on for a second and is like, oh no, it burns. Then, you know, she's betrayed by the fact that this is basically her only friend she's ever had. Except for maybe the hookups she's had in the past, because she's not really allowed to have friends or a social life at all. And she really felt like she had a connection with him and that she trusted him, and feels betrayed. And then another twist and turn of this episode is then, you know, a version of it may have ended at this point, but it turns out that Daddy has bigger plans for his 50th birthday than we even realized, because he's intending to sacrifice his own daughter to the goddess who I guess
it's not a goddess, she's a Davrick demon.
Oh yeah, my
she
bad
eats live sacrifices, and
I guess she requires virgins, which was not made explicit when we are introduced to the idea of Yeska.
Sure not. Now the foursome have arrived to save Virginia. And again, nobody thinks to stop Mr. Bryce, which is insane. So he actually does get to summon Yeska, who
needs some dental work.
Well, yeah, she's got kind of like master teeth.
Yeah.
But Yeska is like, I can't take her because she's fucked. And so then it's a very funny scene where at first you think that Virginia is only, quote, impure because she slept with Wesley. And so at this point, we're like, oh, my God, did she lose her virginity to Wesley?
Mm-hmm.
But then she's like, no, I fucked this chauffeur. I fucked that chauffeur. I fucked your friend Rick. And it's just like laying into her dad about it. And there was no slut shaming except for Gunn, who said, I could have told you that she wasn't a virgin.
Yeah.
And it was like, Gunn, come on.
This was almost the perfect scene where everyone was just letting her live and she was not at all ashamed. I mean, she wasn't. That's something I love, that she,
yes,
it didn't even occur to her to be ashamed by it.
No.
Like, she, it was very like, wait a minute. You thought I was that's what this was about? Like, you literally thought I was a virgin? Are you nuts? Like, and she had no sense of like, I should be embarrassed by this or anything. She
totally
just owned it. Yeah, everyone was kind of like witnessing this play out, sort of like, ooh, I don't feel like I should be part of this conversation right now, but here we are.
And then she punches her dad in the face, which was
a really great punch too. Sends him flying.
But then in the end of this episode, we see that she has forgiven Wesley because he saved her, and those magazines that Cordelia was reading, Wesley and Virginia now appear in them as kind of like they kind of look coupley.
They do. That's how they're being talked about in the gossip rags.
Yeah.
The hot couple around town, and he's the bodyguard to the stars. And both Cordelia and Angel are jealous of
Wesley. They're like, this fucking guy? Like, okay, there's three of us. And obviously, like, he would be the last person that we assume would get famous. And, like, it's kind of fucked that he did.
Yeah, it like how the tides have turned from the opening, the cold open, to this final scene. And I'm very curious to see moving forward how this will affect Wesley's orientation in the group.
Totally.
And his understanding of his own capabilities. Thank you for listening to this episode of Angel on Top. I'm Laura Zak, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, or check out my website, laurazak.com.
And I'm Brittany Ashley, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brit27Ash. That's Brit with two T's, 27 Ash.
You can also follow Angel on Top on Instagram and Twitter at AngelOnTopCast, and you can email us at AngelOnTopPodcast@gmail.com.
And now, please enjoy the poem for Guys Will Be Guys from Wesley's point of view.
As Angel.
Guys will be guys. Tending the desk while my boss acts quite erratic. It's lower than my pay grade, but I'm not dramatic. Judgmental stranger believes me to be inept. If only he knew the rogue demons I've left wrecked. With Angel's head in Darla-shaped clouds, I'm the man of this hypothetical house. Cordelia's regard for authority is disgraceful. This very male shirt doesn't look like a blouse. But when Cordy's in danger, I take on Angel energy. Ha! As if Angel could ever concoct a plan that cleverly. None of these lads suspect a thing. I'm positively golden. Being an ensouled vampire's easy. I deserve my own slogan. I almost lost my cool when offered a glass of warm gore. That swig should have killed me. It was a pretty hefty pour. Turns out I did too well. Now they think I'm some guard. I have to protect Bryce's daughter? Doesn't sound very hard. I'm called to the mission as Virginia's new protector, though she's very attractive. I vow to respect her. As my alter ego, I hope she can resist unconscious seduction, but twice in one day, I stop her attempted abduction. Back in her bedroom quarters, Virginia opens up to me. I sure feel for the girl. What's a life that's not free? But when it starts to get intimate, there's logistical confusion. For I am not cursed vampire, just a horny British human. So what happened next? A gentleman never tells. I'll give you just one clue. We totally had sex. But my post-coitus morning glee is cut short when Bryce learns of my mortal condition. But worst of all, Virginia feels betrayed. This is my least favorite sexual position. Turns out Bryce's 50th birthday is quite far from traditional. With Angel back from his retreat, I need help from Investigation's original. We stop the sacrifice in the nick of time, but it's nullified due to some humping. I save m'lady as just plain old Wesley. He's no angel, but he's surely something.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.